Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. Good morning, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on WLOB 100.5 FM. And today, our guest is Henry Glickel, who is the author of The Power of Proactive Recruiting. Find, attract, and retain top quality talent to keep your company at the forefront of your market. Henry, welcome to the show.
David, thank you for having me on, longtime listener. And it's an honor and privilege to be a guest. I got a lot of big shoes to fill, so hopefully
you're going to be fine.
Provide some useful information.
No, you're going to be fine. I got to tell you, obviously, we've known each other for a while, and you are certainly what we would call someone who understands recruiting and understands the power of proactive recruiting. So, Henry, talk to us a little bit first. You know, you wrote this book. Tell us what got you to the point of saying, hey, I want to write a book about this topic. What got you to that point?
Well, you know, I've been recruiting now 20 years. At the time that I thought about writing a book, somebody basically put it in my head, wow, you got a lot of information. You should put it down into a book. Well, first I did a couple of articles, and then all of a sudden it kind of fleshed out some major topics and ideas and areas of kind of concentration on the various aspects of recruiting that prompted me to start putting my thoughts down. And before I know it, you know, I was at like 30 pages and then 40 pages and then 60 pages. And before I knew it, you know, it was probably about 90-100 pages of information. And then from there, it kind of added to it stories, things like that. And before you know it, you know, the book ended up being about 125 pages or something like that. But it was a really wonderful exercise, especially if you've been doing something a very long time. It brings a lot of things back to understand, you know, what got you there. So it was a good exercise.
You know, one of the things that people may not know is that you are a certified employee retention specialist. What does that mean?
Well, the CERS, that's what it's called in the industry, is a designation of the National Association of Personnel Services, which is a basically governing body for education and support of the industry and staffing industry, firms and individuals. And they have a couple certifications. One's a certified temporary specialist, and another one is a CPC, certified personnel consultant. And both of those come with books or preparation material, and you take a test, and you have to score a certain amount on the test. And then there's another designation, and it's only held by about maybe 60 people in the United States, called the Certified Employment Retention Specialist. And it's basically a designation that instead of just recruiting and staffing, it's identifying and helping companies determine strategies and teaching companies strategies on retaining engaging, really retaining, but also engaging is a secondary part of it, engaging the employees that you already have. It's an intense, it's a lot of reading and preparation to it, and then you take a test. In fact, I now teach the course at the annual conferences for NAPS.
Well, as a recruiter, you know, you would think that retention versus hiring would be almost counterintuitive to what you do on a daily basis on the recruiting side. How does that all work?
Well, individuals, how would I best say this? Individuals that are valued to a company are really individuals you don't want to lose. In fact, the cost of replacing an individual who is productive can be anywhere between 50% to about 25 times their annual salary, depending on how valuable they are. And there's a lot of times where individuals who are leaving the company or who you do not, who are not as productive as you want, you don't mind them leaving. And using a recruiter to place them with a better individual is a sound, logical progression. However, individuals that are valuable to the company need to be engaged and feel comfortable. They got to feel appreciated. They got to be paid commensurate to the market. Those are individuals that you want to keep. So, and by the way, those people are hard to replace. So even if you engage a recruiter to find them, it may be harder to find the person who is as good, much less better, than the candidate that you already have there. So teaching companies, or more importantly, helping companies identify individuals that are high value to the corporate, to the company, is very important. And using a recruiter who's a CSRS qualified individual will help you maintain and keep those individuals. And the ones that are not performing or it's not the right position, those are individuals that you can replace and use a recruiter to identify better talent than the talent you as a company already have.
In today's market, certainly we would say that it is an employee-driven market versus where it's been over the last 5 years or so, where, you know, it's really been an employer's market. Right now, as you know, companies are talking about it's hard to keep and get great talent. It's hard to retain great talent. What are you seeing, and what are you seeing right now in the marketplace in regards to how managers and organizations are focused on the talent acquisition or talent management structure?
Let me answer that, but first, let me give you a little historical perspective that I think may help. There was a book out called The War for Talent, and it basically forecasted that there were not going to be enough people to fill the positions that companies had. In fact, it was forecasted in that book that there were going to be 10.1 million more professional jobs than people able to fill them. And that was supposed to start at about the 2005 or 6 and kind of crest to that 10 million mark in about 2010. Well, basically, the stock market had some major impact, a financial crisis, a lot of markets kind of evaporated overnight, a lot of industries. But what happened is that war for talent, that gap between the number of people and the number of positions, that didn't change. It just moved from 2010 up to about 2016 or 17. The recession just pushed that anomaly or that market, employment market trend out about 6 years. So we're feeling now what that book said we were going to feel then. And the companies now are faced with a couple things. Number one, by the year 2020, 50% of the workers in the world will have been born after 1980. That means there'll be 40 or less. They'll outnumber individuals 40 or greater. Well, all those individuals who have delayed retirement are now coming to grips and retiring, and it's going to start kind of creating another impact on a push, which is going to create a squeeze for good talent. So what's happening is companies are vying for less available people to, in a market that's expanding, meaning the demand for individuals are higher, meaning the demand for workers are higher. And at a time where the individuals who are under 30 years old are more likely and prone to make changes in their careers at a faster pace than individuals who are 35 years and older. So what's happening is you've got all of these, I wouldn't call it a perfect storm, but it's a lot of factors that are causing pressure on employers to find the talent, keep the talent, and also engage them.
In your book, and we're talking with Henry Glickel, he is the author of The Power of Proactive Recruiting, Find, Attract, and Retain Top Quality People to Keep Your Company at the Forefront of Your Market. In the book, you talk about identifying quality candidates and basically provide a process in which organizations can really look and find great talent. You say on the back here, this book is a map through the jungle of a world out there we call hiring, with some recipes from some great snacks along the way. You know, what is the first step that you really find that companies either miss or companies really should be thinking about before they even get to the point of getting ready to hire and recruit?
Well, you know, everyone thinks, okay, it's time to run an ad. Let's dust off the job description, things like that. And I think when somebody leaves or you have an opening, I think this offers a great opportunity for companies in and of themselves to really look and see what the role of that individual is. Look at what their actions. It's interesting, at BAL we did something, there's some very innovative thinking here, and one of the things that really impressed me was they, instead of creating a job description, they created something called a role map. And a role map is, what exactly will you be, what are the end results and accountabilities that you're responsible for? And then you work your way back. What are the actions and skill sets that you need to fulfill those responsibilities and accountabilities? So the company, this offers a great opportunity for the company, instead of just polishing off a job description, by the way, which basically could be as old as 30 or 40 years old, and it's just been updated to be, quote, address the legal and the law changes about wording. But other than that, many job descriptions are regurgitations or variations or mutations of stuff that was 30, 40 years ago. Whereas the concept of a role map and things like that that are a little more innovative will allow individuals or companies to kind of reverse engineer. So that's the first step, you know, is to create a role map. What are the accountabilities? What is it that this person end results are going to be, and working your way back. It's a hard exercise, but what I found is that individuals and companies that perform that action and activity increase their likelihood of identifying individuals that are not necessarily the best interviewers, but are the best matches for the performance indicators on the job.
What you're looking for, really, from a company perspective, is to find a talent that matches and fits, right, your organization. The word fit we use quite a bit. You talk about having it being reverse engineers, where, in other words, you're looking to get something, an input or an output, I should say, from this person. How do you deal with, or how do you, right at the front end, deal with that culture part of hiring?
Culture is very, very, very important. Most people think a culture is the rules and regulations in which people work under. Those are a piece of things. The culture is about the dress code. It's about typical hours. It's about the interactions between the individuals in the company. What is the communication within the company? Those are things that are important. But one of the things that companies can do is first determine why, in relation to a culture, is find out why people do not fit within a company. That they may have had the skill sets and experience, but why didn't they fit within a company? What happened to where somebody left before a prescribed period, and where was the disconnects? And that's the key. You find out where those disconnects are, then what you'll do is, skills and experience are nice, but the culture fit is what can help tenure a person longer.
We're talking with Henry Glickel. He is the author of The Power of Proactive Recruiting, Find, Attract, and Retain Top Quality People to Keep Your Company at the Forefront of Your Market. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB on FM 100.5, and we will be right back.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. And today we're talking with Henry Glickel. He is the author of the book, The Power of Proactive Recruiting, Find, Attract, and Retain Top Quality People to Keep Your Company at the Forefront of Your Market. I'm David Chulo, and we're having a great conversation about this new book, Henry. We appreciate you being on the show. On page 11, you have a great quote by Dennis Miller. He says, "The easiest job in the world has to be coroner. Surgery on dead people, what's the worst thing that could happen? If everything went wrong, maybe you'd get a pulse." That's good. I like that. When people are looking for candidates with a pulse, you provide in this book really a step-by-step process with some solid examples and illustrations of really how it is that employers could really benefit from hiring the right way. So let's talk about that. You know, right at the beginning, how does an employer prepare once they've selected a candidate for that interview process?
Let's say after you've defined the job description and you've identified and used the recruiter or sourcing methodology to find and identify the candidates. You know, a lot of things you can do is use the use the social media. But then the next step comes, and that's the idea of kind of, I call it doing your homework. And I spoke earlier about kind of why interviews fail. And let's go into a little more in depth. And I think one of the things that happens is individuals kind of, hiring authorities wing it, and they ask very general, generic questions, and basically vague questions or generic questions get vague answers. They prompt the answers. Number two, many hiring managers that are interviewing, they talk too much. Although you need to be active and engaging with the individual, you really want to ask questions that are very open and elicit more than yes-no responses, and ask the question and let them answer, let the candidates answer. Another problem that happens is individuals, when they're interviewing or going through things, they go with their gut feelings, and that, I think, gets people in more trouble. Gut feelings means you hire based on an emotion and not on facts. The emotion should come at the very end, not at the beginning. What you're doing is using the questions to qualify and determine their viability of culture, their fit on the job, experience and skill sets, traits, attributes, and behaviors. But then, once you have all those addressed, then you can use your gut feel a little bit because you've got the solid foundation. Picture it as you don't build a house without a good concrete foundation or something for the house to sit on. Making a decision is like the house. And, you know, the gut feeling could be the house, but it's got to sit on something solid. A lot of individuals go in, and they're not prepared for an interview. You know, they're just winging it. Ah, yeah, I've done 1,000 of these interviews. I can appreciate that you've done 1,000 interviews. They think they've done 1,000 interviews. The problem is each interview is different in and of itself. But the key is, after they've addressed those problems, is helping define the ideal candidate and also coming up with the solid, viable questions and preparing for the interview. The real three critical factors in getting through the interview are, number one, can a candidate do the job and do it well? Are they motivated and interested in the position? And three, are they fit in the corporate culture? All those actions about behaviors, values, experience, all experience, skills, communication, things like that, all center around those three areas. And I think if they kind of hone in with that in mind, they'll have a better start than many other companies will.
You know, we're talking about, obviously, the employer. But what are some reasonable expectations, for example, that employers should have about, hey, the potential candidates that come in? I mean, what are some reasonable expectations that employers should have about candidates?
Number one, that the candidate comes in somewhat prepared. They've done the research. They understand the job. They've done the research on the company and on the industry. Number two is that the candidate can articulate about their past experience, either work experience or education. And those are the expectations that coming in right off the bat that an employer should understand and depend on.
How about from an employee side? You know, that employee is sitting there. You're selling to them as much as they're selling to you. What should an employee expect that you're going to be as the employer or the interviewer? Should they have an expectation of?
That's a great question. Today's market, companies have to sell, and they got to buy for candidates as much as the candidates are vying for the jobs. Interesting, I heard a statistic. It used to be there were three active individuals for every job. And then it's turned around now to where there's three active jobs for every active candidate. That's changed significantly to the fold of like nine times. So as a candidate, what they can expect from an individual that they're interviewing with, number one, is an understanding of the position. The ability to articulate about the culture, the ability to focus in and understand the roles, the manager's expectations and who they would be reporting to, past history of the individuals that have held that job, and also how this position fits in interacting with not just their manager, but with other individuals in the company. It's funny because I think of this one position, a very interesting position at BAO, was in accounting and finance. And it was funny because that position ended up connecting to almost seven different kinds of roles within the company. It was the fulcrum of communication among the whole company. So in addition to having certain skills, now an individual going into an interview could have those skills, but the real piece of it was understanding that they were going to interact with seven different kind of individuals within the company. And they needed other soft skills and capabilities to be able to successfully execute on it. And what's funny is during the time that we did that, we added some extra skills or more traits and attributes of the individuals that were soft skill related. And what's funny is the individual that we secured in that position has done very well in the position, but not just because of their experience, but because that role was identified as a significant linchpin and the soft skills were needed. During an interview, the candidate can't know that. However, the ability of the individual who's interviewing, the interviewer, able to articulate why that was important, helped find the right person.
We're talking with Henry Glickle. He is the author of The Power of Proactive Recruiting. Henry, you know, one of the things, now that you've interviewed someone, you feel like they're potentially the right fit, you're getting ready to make them an offer, right? You're getting ready to make that happen. Is there a correct way to make an offer? Is there a way that makes, you know, the employer feel like, because this feels like a negotiation, which I guess in some ways it is. Is there a way to make that comfortable for both parties?
Well, in the book, I delineate kind of three elements of a good offer or an agreement. And one is mutual respect, gain for both parties, and a strong foundation for a long-term kind of solid working relationship. A lot of companies under underestimate or underappreciate the value of things that are not salary related that need to be articulated during an offer. For example, benefits. Benefits can cost or provide as much as 35% of an individual's wages. And that just not only includes health insurance and dental, but also the flex time, the 401ks, comp time, sick leave, vacation, kind of employee recognition, holidays, training. I will tell you, one of the strongest points of companies like BAO is providing a long-term training in a specific area like sales. That is of significant value that if somebody were to pay for that, it would be a significant amount of money. Listen, Dale Carnegie is an excellent training for individuals. However, sometimes if they can't get to a Dale Carnegie course or a site, companies can provide that somewhat professional selling or professional skill development within their own ranks. If they can do that, that's a significant value to the candidate. And also, if candidates have questions during an offer stage, it shouldn't be seen negatively. It means there's interest, unless they're just asking about the money and things like that. If they're just asking about the money, then it may be a compensation issue. But if they're asking questions about things that they didn't get answers to during the interview, that this offers a good opportunity to build a level of trust with the candidate. So, you know, this is a very critical time because you've invested a lot of time in screening and sourcing and interviewing, and now you're at offer stage. You know, you've got a lot of time invested in that candidate. So that candidate, by the way, has a lot of time invested in you as an interviewer. Helping that candidate through the process of understanding the things that they don't know, but they have inquiry or information on, is important.
No, it absolutely is. And we're talking with Henry Glickle. He's the author of The Power of Proactive Recruiting, Find, Attract, and Retain Your Top Talent to Keep Your Company at the Forefront of Your Market. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, FM 100.5, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And we are sponsored by Jackson Lewis, Beryl Dana, Redmond Winchell, Sheehan Finney, StrategicHR.com, and Jobs in the U.S. And today we're talking with Henry Glickle. He's the author of The Power of Proactive Recruiting, Find, Attract, and Retain Top Quality People to Keep Your Company at the Forefront of Your Market. Henry, we've been talking about hiring great talent. We brought them through the interview process. We've sourced them out. We're bringing them in. We're getting ready to make the offer. They've accepted the offer. How critical is that onboarding process? You talk about it to accommodate, acclimate, and accelerate new members into the team.
You know, most people think that somebody comes on and just hits the ground running. And in reality, there's a lot of time and effort that's taken upon to do what I call the three A's of onboarding. One is accommodate, two is accentuate, and three is accelerate. The first is accommodate. This is when you're reaching out and providing them the basic tools to make the employee feel at ease in their new environment. And that's critical. And also to accentuate the positive, which is providing the training and guidance necessary to succeed in the position. That's also understanding the job, the related expectations, and how they'll be acclimated into the corporate culture to encourage socialization and kind of foster that sense of belonging. That's very important because individuals don't know what the rules of the game are. And until somebody shows them what are the norms and the traditions of the tribe, for lack of a better word, it's really important for that person to understand that. And then also to accelerate the productivity. And that's like giving feedback and also taking feedback and also kind of improving their performance so that if there's something that's missing in the onboarding, that the next time it can be improved in one of these three areas. And this is more than just, and onboarding is more than just that one half a day, you know, here's a dress code, here's that, here's where your fire escapes are, you know. It's things like, simple things like a tour over everything relating to the complex they're in. Also, going over specifics on dress code. You know, one of the most productive things I ever saw relating to dress code was showing what was considered appropriate and what wasn't. There's nothing worse than somebody coming in what the company deemed as inappropriate dress, and then, but the company didn't articulate the definition of what a certain kind of dress code was. And I think it's important that the more and descriptive that those things, that communication to the individual will make them feel more comfortable at the first couple of days in the first week. But also, if there's three goals in bringing kind of a new employee on board. One is welcoming them and making them feel comfortable. Two is minimizing the time for productivity. And three is establishing a foundation for success and a mutually beneficial relationship. So, and there's things like, and right there in the book is a checklist. There's also kind of a typical orientation programming, things that are included in a typical orientation. And then the last thing, something that a lot of people don't realize is that a lot of onboarding can be, or orientation can be automated and could be put online. And whether it's through videos or things sent to the individual ahead of time and communicating with them so that when they're coming on board, as much stuff that could be done offline or not during the orientation will help acclimate that person and make it seem more normal that this is a process that's understood and that the company knows what they're doing.
What do you think happens when you've taken the time, and you talk about it a little bit in Chapter 9, when good decisions go bad, when you've hired the person, you got them in, you took the time to interview them with the right questions, you brought them in through a process, an interviewing process, you negotiated fairly, the person starts, and somehow, some way, it just seems to fall apart. And that employee just isn't living up to the expectations that you had. They seem to be disengaged. They seem to be something that, you know, isn't exactly what you thought you hired. Why does that happen if you've done the process so well?
You know, you think, hey, listen, if I follow everything the right way, you know, everything should be automatic. Well, number one, there's probably 8 or 9 things that somebody that you may want to, what I call, do an autopsy or a postmortem, as some people do, is number one, did you exhaust the pool of qualified candidates, or did you simply make the position open to those available who were just actively seeking employment? You know, individuals whose just resumes were posted or things like that, instead of using a recruiter or other sources to exhaust and find the best qualified people in the pool. Because when you do that, you will look at individuals who may be better fits, who but are harder to attract. Number two is, did the right people conduct the interview? Did they ask the right questions? Did they listen to the answers? Did they take notes? Did they spend time explaining about the company, the culture, and the position? Okay? Also, did they do adequate reference checks? Did they rush to fill the position? And also, were expectations or performance measures clearly communicated? And then one thing that's not in the book is sometimes companies have unrealistic expectations of the time, of the candidate, of the position that in reality caused the opening in the first place. If the individual left originally from the position, or the position had changed, and there were problems and underlying issues that weren't addressed, those problems and issues will continue with the next hire. If the area is not cleaned, the same problems are going to occur. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you don't clean the area, you know, after a party, for lack of a better word, you know, the mess is still there. It's not going away. You can step on it and kind of work your way around it, but you got to clean up the area and start anew. Well, sometimes the same problems keep rolling in, and they don't think it's a problem with them. They think it's a problem with the candidate, where in reality, maybe a problem with the job or the expectations or the soft skills or the behavior or the values or the experience or the interaction with the company. So they got to look inward to find out potentially it could be that before you look. You got to do that first before you look elsewhere.
You know, we've been talking with Henry Glickel. We've been talking about his book, The Power of Proactive Recruiting. Find, attract, and retain top quality people to keep your company at the forefront of your market, which, of course, can be found on Amazon. And where else, Henry?
It also is on Lulu Press, and it's on iTunes. So if you don't want to read the book, you can listen to the book.
Is it your voice, Henry, doing the book?
No. Unfortunately, I don't have a very good voice. Although I'm a recruiter, and I do talk. The voice was Gail Scott Key, who is a very active in the social media market and has a great experience in broadcasting. And I had the wonderful opportunity of having her do the book, and she has a much more pleasant and melodious voice than myself.
Well, you know, you're doing fine here on the HR Power. We enjoy hearing you on your voice, and I'm sure our listeners
are
going, it's not really bad,
by the way, because you are such, your voice is so engaging. Unfortunately, I was not blessed with such vocal cords.
Well, it's okay. You know what? Because we're talking about a book you wrote, and it doesn't have to be, The Power of Proactive Recruiting. So, you know, Henry, one of the last topics here that I want to go over in this segment, before we head into the last segment, is really about employee engagement. You talk about it in your book, and of course, as we said at the beginning of this, that employers are really looking at how to get great talent and maintain great talent. And employee engagement is probably one of the critical aspects right now in regards to maintaining great talent. In the book, you talk about engagement being something that is critical in terms of retention. Keep your best at their best. It sounds so simple, but it isn't, is it?
No. Engagement is a very concentrated effort, and you can't take for granted. And engagement, by the way, isn't just a one-time thing. Engagement is an ongoing thing that's done either on a weekly basis. And engagement is done in different things on a weekly basis, and there's different engagement activities on a quarterly and a yearly basis. But engagement is critical. I think engagement and retention almost go hand in hand.
When we're talking engagement and you're talking about employees taking the time to write at the beginning, it does start at the beginning, right? You know, once you're onboarding that person, you're bringing them in, that sets the stage for how you're going to engage with that person for probably their career. And that supervisor, that manager, that owner, whoever it is that talks to that individual, that's the starting point in regards to setting the stage for you, what you expect from engagement, correct?
Yes, but engagement is also about understanding the individual's needs and getting them and articulating where the company is heading. And listen, companies need to be somewhat transparent. They don't have to be 100% transparent. There's some things that employees should not be appraised of in relation to the company, but things that are of importance to the company in communication, it's important that they be transparent. Building that trust and accountability, you're asking individuals or employees of the company to be accountable to results. It's important that communication also is there. So the company has to spend more time engaging or effort because you've got more people to engage and more people to communicate and be transparent to. And each one is different, different sectors, different roles, things like that. So it's not one size fits all. It's various actions and activities and planned processes that help individuals, companies, better bond themselves to their employees.
You know, you do a lot of reading, I know. Also, you write a book, obviously. We're talking about the power of proactive recruiting. But you do a lot of reading. Do you have any books that you would recommend to our listeners here to bone up on engagement?
Well, I'll leave the best for last, but the first book, and it's a section of the book, and it's Good to Great, and it was a wonderful book by Jim Collins. There's seven things that basically make a great companies, and the number one thing is getting the right people on the bus and getting them on the right seat. And I think if you read just that one section and explain why that's so critical and important, I think that'll set the tone. So it's kind of like a premise or a prelim to the next book. And the next book is, believe it or not, it's not a book about engagement, but it's a book about understanding and communication. It's a book called The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. 20-some years ago, 30 years ago, I read it, a wonderful book by Dr. Stephen Covey. And it basically breaks down 7 habits of people who are very successful or effective. And basically, there's 7 habits, and the first 3 are related about an individual. Now, it's important because you're understanding you as an individual and the individuals that you're communicating to who are your employees. And habits 4, 5, and 6 are basically developed in communication, collaboration, and teamwork. And then the habit 7 is basically focusing on growth and improvement. By the way, there's a subsequent book called The 8th Habit, which is basically that you share it. Similar to what you do, Dave, you're sharing your expertise and teaching others. And that's important because it embodies all the other habits, that continuous growth and improvement. But I think the greatest resource is a book in relation to engagement and retention. It's a book called The Carrot Principle. It's by Adam Gostick and Chester Elon. And basically, the book explains why managers who are strong in just 4 areas invariably have happier employees and get better business results. And those 4 areas are goal setting, communication, trust, and accountability. And I think when somebody reads these books, what they'll find is, first of all, they'll learn kind of how employee recognition is a very powerful tool, how money is overrated as a vehicle for motivation for most people. There are some people who, and when we talk about money being overrated, it's assuming that everybody has a viable compensation that's competitive in the market. When money is even across the board, that basically money is overrated as a vehicle for motivation. And it also talks about, and that book talks about creating benchmarking for rewards and creating initiatives to kind of develop a talent strategy. And also, it also assigns accountabilities and standards, and it helps map out the growth of critical skills. And it helps also, and this is really important, in today's world, is translating the business objectives into very specific or explicit talent expectations or requirements. So it's an intense book. By the way, it's a great read and it's very viable. Implementing all of it could be very overpowering. But if you read it and just take pieces and start, it's really good. And also, there's a little cheat sheet that basically they have a chapter in it that includes about 120-something really interesting recognition ideas that companies can implement, and many of them are low or no cost, meaning no cost money-wise, but maybe time or effort.
We're talking with Henry Gwickel. He's the author of The Power of Proactive Recruiting, and he's providing us great information on books you can be reading in regards to employee engagement. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today we're talking with Henry Gwickel, author of The Power of Proactive Recruiting. Find, attract, and retain top quality people to keep your company at the forefront of your market. Henry, we've had a great discussion about your book, and I thought I would save the best for last. Since you're a recruiter, and since you're somebody who's looking and going out there to finding great talent, the last chapter in your book, chapter 10, page 124 says, "When is it time to call a recruiter? Who else would know but you? Tell us."
Dave, thank you. I talk in the book about using referrals and other methodologies of identifying candidates, but there are times where I think it's really important to expand the pool of candidates or to identify a pool of candidates that is outside the normal scope of the reach of a company. And I think it's a good idea in about four areas that are very relevant of when to use an outside recruiter. And one is when you need to broaden your search for qualified candidates, including those that are happily employed but don't know about your specific opportunity, meaning the companies. Two is, and this is very relevant now, is with the latest recession, HR and recruiting has been a kind of neglected area. And what's happened is many of them are feeling overwhelmed. And recruiting is taking a great toll on them. So sometimes if you feel your current employees are in HR or recruiting are overwhelmed or overworked, and you feel or you see a lack of productivity in turn from those results, it's a good time to look for a recruiter. Also, when you find yourself with applicants who are unprepared, they're not a good fit, and you feel like you're wasting your time, it's a good time to use a recruiter or look for a recruiter. And also, you know where the good candidates are, but you're not comfortable or your recruiters aren't comfortable with picking up a phone to call your competitors or recruit those candidates out of the company. Those are areas or times I think you use a recruiter.
You know, when you're really thinking about it from a cost analysis or cost perspective, you can really justify the cost for it, can't you?
Absolutely. A good recruiter will cost you anywhere between 25 to 30% of a person's annual compensation. That's their salary and bonus, and it sounds like a lot, but it's basically 3 months' worth of wages. A mishire, you're less likely to have a mishire with a recruiter than you are on your own. And the reason being is because you're identifying a larger pool of candidates in the screening that a recruiter does, an experienced recruiter that knows what they're doing, will bring to the table better qualified or as good qualified candidates. And also they offer replacement guarantees, many good recruiters do. But what you'll find out is if you make a bad hire, not only do you lose those wages, because usually you won't wait until 6 months to replace that person. Well, you've wasted 6 months of not only the person's salary, but lost productivity, training, and also a perception that the management doesn't know what they're doing. If you hire a individual who tenures just 10% or 20% longer from a recruiter, and chances are you will because they'll identify candidates that you usually cannot identify on your own, they'll tenure longer. And leaning back to what it costs, anywhere between 50% to 25 times the salary of an individual, that's the value of an employee. And if you have a mishire, it could cost you near and dear. And by the way, the higher you go up in the food chain, meaning higher in management and company, is those individuals take longer and are harder to replace because there's less of them. Therefore, that cost is significantly greater, and that's in the upper of the 25%.
We've been talking with Henry Glickle. He's the author of The Power of Proactive Recruiting. You can certainly go to hrpowerhour.com after this show. We'll have all his information link, and we'll certainly have a link so that you can buy his book on Amazon. Henry, thank you so much for being a guest today. Good luck with your book, The Power of Proactive Recruiting.
David, thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by VeralDana.com.
This is Tawny Alvarez. Are you an employer who has tipped employees? Are you taking advantage of the tip credit by paying these employees below the applicable minimum wage? If so, when was the last time you performed an audit of your practices to make sure that wages were properly being paid under local, state, and federal law? Federal law provides that all employers provide notice to tipped employees prior to taking advantage of the tip credit. This notice can be oral or written, but must inform employees of five specific facts, including the amount of cash wages the employer is paying the tipped employee, the amount being claimed by the employer as a tip credit, a notation that the employer cannot exceed the amount of tips actually received by the tipped employees, that all tips are to be retained by the employee unless there is a valid tip pool in place, and finally, that the tip credit cannot be applied unless the tip credit notice has been provided to the employee. For more information, contact a member of Veral Dana's labor and employment team at veraldana.com.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by veraldana.com. Next week on the HR Power Hour, Rob Carmichael. He's the Senior Vice President of HR for Maine Savings Federal Credit Union. We'll be talking about how to create opportunities for growth and development to keep employees engaged. That's on the next HR Power Hour. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at hrpowerhour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.